Board of Supervisors is ordered to start with pledge of allegiance followed by a moment of silence.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Go ahead and move to the county administrator's report, Mr. Nichols.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, just a few things to cover quickly. The circuit board always does a good job here, but the clerk and the staff have really been known for great customer service, and they got a really nice email today, especially from signaling on Crystal Larson, but the staff in general, about the passport applications, because there's not very many places around that can expedite a passport in Central Virginia other than Orangeburg on Sear. And so they did a really good job of that and continuing great service. We always get really good comments about the circuit board, it's been fantastic. And we get great comments about the district court now, too.
And I don't think that's required service that they have.
It's not.
No, it's not.
That's right.
It's a good service to folks in Central Virginia and certainly in Grand County.
Yeah.
The summer reading program still continues to struggle. They only get about 300 kids in a month. they've had some great programs. And here's a sample of how good the programs are going. Look at that. I'm not sure that actually meets code, so it might be finalized. Some really great programs for the kids, for summer reading programs, kids and teens. And I really appreciate the hard work they do to give kids something fun to do in the summer and educational and to help parents out.
It's something kind of sad that even in a crowd of 300, the Kenny kids still have a perceptible wedge in that
round. Yeah, there were 200 kids there plus the Kenny kids.
Yeah.
It was really amazing. I'm very appreciative of it because my granddaughter will be hitting those next summer too. I'd like to thank Roger Smith. When we did the Pleasant Grove Water Expansion, the Public Works Department really had Roger oversee most of that. I put in and worked out so well with the barbecue vans and brews. So we really appreciate his work in making sure that the water got put in appropriately and really worked. And then, be thankful to Mr. Shaw, our assistant public works director. Otherwise, you would not have had air conditioning here tonight. It broke down about 4 o'clock. And he jumped out and got the contractor we got in. We're back to normal. And thank goodness, because it would have been pretty brutal in here today.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw.
Some announcements. The cooling station has opened at the Parks and Rec Community Center. So the small gym there is open. I don't mean the gym, but Carrie's working. Louvanna County Community Center. The small gymnasium in the center of that building there is open for a cooling center during the day, and folks can stop down there if they need to get out of the heat or if they've got problems at home. And it's been put out on fan mail and on the website that the fire and rescue stations know, the sheriff's office knows, and
some great needs.
Cooling station, please.
You can catch your own to your fire, catch up to this.
We got the notification. The 11th Evaluation Developatorium class starts this September. So those who are interested, there's a link on our website, but then you can also go directly to the Leadership Development website. They have a very nice new website that's easy to navigate, and I can attest that it being a really good quality course. I know that several of our supervisors have gone through as well, and I had two staff last year, two of the new senior staff go through. One's already signed up for this year's class, and so it's a really good learning experience. And for $25, you'll never get a better value than that. Because you get a free meal, but yeah. The RFP, or request for proposals, it issued for engineering and architectural services. We've had 15 firms respond. They've interviewed this week 7 of the firms. Three of those firms will be selected for final negotiations, and we may select one or more of those firms that they'll be pre-identified, so we can send them task orders for company general architectural or engineering services. So that we'll have those already online, already pre-vetted, so they're ready to go if we've got services that need to be done. This is a really good project initiated by our purchasing officer, Mr. Rodish, and it's going to make a big difference for public works to be able to get projects done more quickly by getting kind of a qualified firm already identified for A&E services and very the water ROI study is we received it from TJPDC. The good note is it was 66.92 was the final bill. The board had authorized up to 10,000, so the final bill is 66.92. We've received their final product. We are looking at some of the model assumptions and the source data to make sure. And that the one of the big differences between the two models is the first one was really done in a document form. The second one was really done in a spreadsheet form. Now, there's some of the same types of charts, but we've got to merge those, and there's an assumption that are differences list that I can show you here. These are the kinds of things that are different between the two different documents. And we'll have a list of assumptions with those two. The other thing that's really important to note on the new one is the... user guide. There's actually a user guide now. So when we publish this out to the web, we're supposed to get to the user guide and deal with it that describes the various different fields in the document, where it came from, and then it'll talk about the general structure of the files and what they look like, and how to look at data and what tabs to look at in the model itself. So once I get a chance to finish that up, we've got a meeting tomorrow morning with my water team staff. We'll get that to the board and then release it for the public review with both of them.
So we won't be discussing the ROI in new business?
Based on your parameters that you set yesterday, I can't put that together that fast and do it tonight. I can pull it up and show you, but I can't do the comparison that quick because it's more detailed than that. So to the level of detail you asked, we don't know.
All I asked for was just a comparison between what Thomas Joseph Planning District presented to the board in April, or the county in April, versus what the final tweaking was from staff at the end of the day.
The big block here. So the big difference here, I know this is hard to read for the audience, but the big difference here is there was a book that listed things and talked about the project rather than a spreadsheet that showed the actual data and the diagrams. There is a spreadsheet, but it's harder to follow because it's more working data. This one actually has a spreadsheet with the charts right there and connected right to the different types of model data that goes with that. The other thing is the old study from April of 2012, last year, that's when they finished that last study. May of 2012. When that study was finished, it included assumptions, including VOC in part of the water needs and the kind of buoys in part of the water needs. Those have been pulled back out of there. In addition, the updated costs for DOC options, aqua options, and modeling for growth and expansion for slow growth, expected growth, and high growth have been updated in there. And the costs associated with elevated storage tank rather than ground bank storage tank have been improved. The connection rate has been changed. The original ROI, apparently, Quebec County, when they originally asked for this, asked for a 90% connection of existing development within Zion Crossroads within the first year. And not very realistic if you take the businesses potentially, but not homeowners in that area. And so what we asked them to revise it so there's 90% of existing uses would eventually connect, but those connections would be spread out over the 10-year first period of the water plant. Now, those can be adjusted any time, but that's one of the changes that's in there, because the first one was a little too aggressive, assuming 90% of connection of everything in the first year of the document. And then the existing land use data that was used the first time has been updated with whatever has happened from our planning department. They've updated that land use data and made sure that the parcels are identified correctly in there. So I can show you an example of, I can't pull the pyramid. That's the kinds of differences between those two. What you'll see then is you'll see what the basic assumptions were in the first model, so we put these things up, and what they are in this model. Largely, the new model takes two variables, a DOC option and an aqua option, runs them similar up to 75K, runs them a little differently up to 125K, because that's what sewer limit currently, and then runs them up to 500K for the water that's out of the aqua proposal. So the growth rate, for instance, on the 75K DOC proposal
will drop off dramatically. It will go back to what is normal growth rate without water and sewer services in that area. And then the awkward one will go to something a little bit higher than that because there's still water shares, there's no sewer service unless we have sewer. So those are the kinds of assumptions that will be there. Those can be changed by hitting one block. So you can change that assumption, see what changes on the total dollars and on the graphs that go with it. And it's a very easy model to adjust in those ways. So there, the new model, the new spreadsheet has the initial tab shows you the results. Then there are three red tabs, which are assumptions. Then there are three four or five green tabs that have the basic data, the core data back behind it, like the property tax or property value, current tax rates, and things like that. So that's how it's developed. But these are the substantive differences between those two documents when you ask them to restudy and take out the variables that have changed since the first one. Because the first one was delivered in May of 2012, but was based on assumptions from a year or two before.
And these are assumptions that were drafted by staff, by management?
Drafted by staff and TJPDC.
And TJPDC?
Yes.
How did they include them when they delivered in April?
They delivered it in May of 2012.
But they didn't deliver any documentation to the county in April 2013?
No, the one from April 2013 is ours. It's the current one. They want the modelings of what are exactly what TJPDC and staff sat down and worked on. And the one that was delivered in April was the draft of the new ROR. And I've got every document. I've got all of those in sequence and dated from the draft up.
Okay.
So that's the basic differences. But once I get that laid out so it's in a usable form, then those will come to the board and then we can publish it to the website. So you can have it a couple weeks before, at least a couple weeks before the public hearing. So we've got that to use too.
Very good. Any questions from the board? Is that round up the report?
One more, just a reminder that our next regular meeting, we only have one meeting in August. It's a 2 o'clock and a 7 o'clock meeting. And because of the public hearing for the non-competitive proposal, we moved that to the new high school auditorium. And that will be at the 7 o'clock meeting. The 2 o'clock meeting will be a regular meeting. 7 o'clock meeting, no, 2 o'clock meeting will go away. 2 o'clock meeting will be set up for both meetings. So at the auditorium for both the 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock, 2 o'clock will be regular business as we normally have in the 2 o'clock meeting. 7 o'clock
will
be
our
additional business plus the public hearing.
No,
there, so we don't have to set up the two places.
That's only if you get you advertise and then you change the location.
Oh.
That's what happens. So
okay.
This one we're just going to have local advertise for that thing.
Right. Rather than trying to do it two different places, yeah. Trying to set up two different places. With two percent things, it's easier just to set up once. And plus, if there's any problems in the afternoon, not that we think there are, we'll certainly test it again. But if there are any problems in the afternoon, sound systems and things like that, we can get resolved for you. Because you know, you would expect more people to go like
in about 1,000 states,
999 cities. if you go to 1,000 above, there's different fire protection regulations, so they always say 999. So
yeah,
but we have a place. Parking space.
We would all get public comments out in the front circle of the board.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I think we have some later in the board. I don't think we mentioned this, but our sheriff is serving on the national sheriff's board of quite an accomplishment.
I haven't heard that unless I've been included here.
He's too
modest.
Yes.
Don't tell me about it. They were asking why I didn't include it in the brief. I didn't know that otherwise I was certainly included. Yeah. I was always looking for things to put in the bus. Anybody from staff to. Because there's a lot of good things to go on.
When did this happen?
A couple weeks ago. I think he went to
Charlotte,
North Carolina. He had to campaign.
He's a great man. Very good one. Very good.
Yeah, yeah,
and of course, these areas are tenured with the Community Sheriff's Association as well, so not an insignificant achievement.
These are the things that are kind of still on the list. We'll do the voluntary contributions update tonight. Water infrastructure is kind of ongoing, and then the other things are just continuing projects that we're working on. The ones now that is schools units, that's an ongoing project. We're still continuing to work with them. We'll come back to you with a formal plan on how
staff for that's going to be. The schools, my staff and the school staff have met a couple of times on it already, and we've got a meeting coming up with Munis to be able to go through details of a cloud-based Munis system for both the school and county, where you have two databases to talk to the department, so we don't have to do it local. That frees up a little bit of time on the staff. It's not necessarily less costly, but it's just we're going to try to get people, if we can, then we've got the ability to do other things with staff time rather than manage that and do the updates. So you'll be seeing a package on that with the county staff and schools in the coming weeks.
Very good. Any other questions for the county administrator?
Do you have the report that you gave last time on the cost of development in the high school on the web?
Yes, ma'am.
Good.
If it wasn't in your package, Mary, do you remember if that was in the package ahead of time? School's brief from last time?
There's school information.
Probably wasn't. I think we sent it to you all ahead of time, but I don't think it was in the package. We'll post it in the webinar. And we'll get it to Mrs. Keller so she can post it on her website too.
Any other questions? Okay, we'll go ahead and move into public comment. I'll make one note by public comment. Tab S is Hotel Street Capital. There's a strong likelihood that we will defer that. Neither the applicant nor anybody representing that could be here this evening. So typically we ask members of the public to go ahead and reserve their comments if there's a public hearing for the public hearing. We are not reserving you for that at all. So go ahead and speak during public comment and encourage you to do so because we will more than likely defer that to a later date. So with that, we'll go ahead and open up the first round of public comment. Please remember to keep your comments on topic, addressed to the board, and within 5 minutes. So anyone wishing to address the board? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close that first round of public comment. We'll move on to our public hearing. Tab S, Hotel Street Capital. Mr. Nichols.
So, we've got the package ready, we've got the brief ready, we can do whatever you want, but if you choose to defer, when the applicant has requested deferral, if you choose to defer the public hearing, then I would suggest you don't open the public hearing, you make a motion to defer it, and then if you want to have a discussion about that project with the board, I would think that would be appropriate with the citizens here to be able to hear the discussion.
Certainly. We have a motion.
Mr. Chair, for this...
You have a motion right there behind you, Mr.
Chairman. I move the Board of Supervisors to defer CMP 1202 a request to amend the Blue County Zoning Act with respect to approximately 222.3 acres of tax map section 30, of tax map 30, section 8, parcel 110, and 10 acres of tax map 19, section 8, parcel 39C for aggregate of 232.03 acres to initially consult the same. Marfree Residential Planning Community Additional to Plan Unit Development.
Sir, before you second that, if you're going to defer this, I suggest for it to a date, sir.
Mr. Nichols, do you have a recommended date, sir?
The first really reasonable available day would be September 18th because it's a 7 o'clock meeting. You don't have an August meeting, and you normally don't do your public hearings on the first meeting of the month, September 4th, because it's a 2 p.m. meeting, and I think you're going to be gone. So the first available meeting you have, unless you call a special meeting, is September 18th.
September 18th, Mr. Chester.
September 18th.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. Chester, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
Second motion, Mr. Booker.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chester.
I move the Board of Supervisors for SUP 1302 a request for a special use permit to allow major utilities in conjunction with the plan unit development with respect to approximately 222.3 acres of tax map 30, section 8, parcel 110, 10 acres of tax map 19, section 8, parcel 39C, subject to the conditions listed in this statute.
Is there a second? Motion made by Mr. Chester, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. We'll defer until 18 September. Do we have any discussion at this point in time? Members of the Board of Supervisors would like to make a comment with regards to the Walker's Ridge project? Hearing none, go ahead and move to tab T. It's SUP 1303, Jason J. Farron, Baldwin, Repair Service Establishment, Mr. Tuttle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This is item SUP 1303. It's a special use permit request for an automotive repair service establishment in the Fork Union Election District. It is zoned agricultural, hence the reason it's before the board this evening. It's on a 4.5-acre parcel, zoned agricultural. All surrounding properties are also zoned agricultural. This is an aerial image for the board. It's in a four-lot subdivision served by a private access easement. The subject property is in the upper, go back one screen. It's in the upper right-hand corner here where the red dot is. A few photographs for the board. Again, the access easement that serves the four lots driving into the property. You can see the existing 30 by 40 detached garage in the background. Close-up photograph, 30 by 40 metal building. This is along the left side of Mr. Farron's property. It borders his closest neighbor. He's planted a row of Leland cypress, which there's already a row of existing tree line there that serves as a buffer. Added vegetation will increase that that buffer between the garage and the adjacent property. So when evaluating SUPs, we use two general guidelines. The proposed use should not tend to change the character of the established pattern of the area or the community. This is a detached garage. One of the conditions of approval would be that all of the automotive repair would be conducted within the closed building. Therefore, would create or lower any possibility of dust, noise, or odors. Additionally, by right uses in an agricultural district that are similar would be non-commercial greenhouses and accessory dwelling units. Back at the June 26th Planning Commission meeting, the Planning Commission did recommend approval 5-0. In conclusion, again, this is a request to allow for a special use permit for an automotive repair service establishment. Per the conditions, all the activity would be conducted inside the building, and the garage itself is minimally visible to the adjoining property owners. With this application, the board may want to consider potential impacts such as traffic entering and exiting the property, noise, dust, and vibration, and staff is not aware of any additional impacts that may be associated with this application. So with that, I'll answer any questions that you may have.
Do you have a sign out there in front of the place?
Yes, sir. There's a public hearing notice sign posted on 619.
Here?
Yes, sir. Mr. Farron is here.
Okay, very good. Obviously, if you have any questions, we're going to ask that process. So do you have any questions?
I just have one sign entry. I want to prevent what happened in the past.
Yeah.
So, is the signage for the business been set up?
Mr. Farron hasn't requested any business signage as of yet. I guess you're asking about business signage.
Right.
Yes, he has not requested any signage. If he does request signage, it would be on a separate sign application.
It'd be awful nice to let his neighbors know that we've got good business.
All right.
I'm sure the county staff would be more than happy to accommodate a question that you ask. So.
Yes, sir.
There we go. Do we have any other questions from the board, Mr. Chesson?
I guess I do have one question. It has to do with the environmental issues. And I just wonder what precautions were going to be taken to protect our environment.
Yes, sir. One of the conditions, the stream is a good ways away, but one of the conditions of approval is that all materials, automotive oil, tires, parts, etc., would be recycled in accordance with state and local laws. So that is one of the conditions of approval, and staff can follow up on, if this is approved, staff can follow up on that and make sure it's being processed in accordance with the local laws.
But I noticed at other locations that are back in the woods, people have a tendency to leave their discarded vehicles back in there, and I don't know if that's...
Tires.
Tires, right.
But that ordinance is still not applied by the vehicles.
In this case, it would be a violation. So be more specific than you were.
And I think that creek is probably, what, a mile and a half?
Well, I don't believe it's quite that far. I haven't walked it. I haven't measured it, but it's looking at the map. It's a good distance. It's to the north of the garage.
A branch. It's 761. It says it's a half mile.
Well, there's the creek I was referring to is north of the subject property, so it would be about here.
This kind of creek?
Yeah,
this
kind of creek. So that's fine. Any further questions? Here we go. Thank you, Mr. Tuggle. Here's going to go ahead and open up the public hearing. Again, please remember to keep your comments on topic during the board within 5 minutes. Is there anyone wishing to address the board? Seeing none, go ahead and close that round of the public hearing. Any further conversation from the board? Hearing none, we'll have a motion.
Receipts for these taxes, like they do with for their personal property taxes, tax revenues if required. The minimum contribution amount we would believe should be $10. There's a substantial processing any kind of payment from someone. So if you want to collect, you know, 20 cents from someone, it'll cost more than that just to collect the 20 and write the receipt and post it to the records. So I think $10 in this day and age is a reasonable amount, but that's subject to your will too. Contributions of less than that amount would be returned to the donator on cash, or hopefully if they're in cash, hopefully would be mailed. When paid by check, a separate check would be required to make sure the funds are deposited to the signed budget line rather than mixed in with the personal property or the real estate property tax bill. Donations can be made in several ways. You can either do it by cash or check or in the treasurer's office. You can certainly do it by mail to the treasurer's office with a check, personal check to send in with your mailing. Mailing your personal property, or if you happen to get your real property bill at your house, or your address, it's not going to mortgage something. Or you can do it online on the county website at any time throughout the year. There is a third-party convenience fee when you use a personal check or a credit card online. That program has been in place for some time, so when the treasurer's office accepts payment online by check, personal check, or credit card, the company that manages that does have a convenience fee for those charges made online. We don't currently accept debit credit cards at the treasurer's office. The information explaining the program would be on the slip of paper or on the bill. How would they get it? Would explain the voluntary contribution program. And then another portion of that would be the detachable slip that you come back in with their donation, designating where it would go. The forms would also be available at various places. You could do meetings, you could have forms available to lobby so people would take it home and mail it even if they wanted to make a donation. The designated agencies that we recommend are these six listed down below. You don't see fire and rescue on there, but they're separate independent corporations and they have their own fundraising methods. You don't see specific programs like the girls lacrosse team at the high school, because it's very difficult to get down to that level of detail. But you can go to the county general fund, public schools, the Parks and Recreation Department, Social Services, the Special Welfare Fund that's already set up, the Sheriff's Department, and County Library. Now, we're certainly open to other areas of that. Those seem like the simplest to actually designate right to a targeted area. We look at all kinds of other special areas, but the more specialized you make it, the more difficult it is to kind of manage it. And I doubt that too many people are going to want to donate, you know, $25 to the County Finance Department. So people, things like that are included. So that's the basic policies. Those are in this document, the accounting policy, that lists, I've got this yellow highlighted in the middle, I'm still trying to flesh out what things it could not be applied to, specifically salary benefits and stipends. But I'm not sure if there's other areas we're still kind of thinking about that. The final proposal that comes to you will have that fleshed out for you to make a decision on. It'll be in your package for the next board meeting so you can see it in advance. The rest of this is, as I've already discussed, that's the policy document. And then the forms we've talked about, the forms as an example, you've got two forms in front of you, a lavender form and a yellow form. The one on the screen here that looks a little lavenderish like this has a front side, the top portion, that talks about the voluntary contributions program and what the program is about and how it works. The back side is actually the contribution form, and it allows you to either bring this form in person or by mail to the treasurer's office. You can designate your contribution, select what area you want to support, put your personal information on there, and then mail that in or drop that off at the treasurer's office. These forms can be available at various sites. You can certainly be available at the treasurer's office. And the same function, well, let me go on to the next slide. If we get something where someone mails in $2, that's below the threshold of $10 we've set. For whatever reason, if the donation has to be returned because they said they wanted to go to the Girls Across program and it's not designated in the form, this yellow form that you've got in front of you would be the one that would go back in the envelope to mail back to the individual to say why we're returning their contribution and not accepting it. So that's the draft form for that portion of it. And then, well, there are some costs. Let me go on. I'll come back to the cost because that's more complicated. To do this, we could have the website option up by September 1st. We could have the treasurer's office up by September 1st for actually taking ones, you know, when somebody is standing at the counter wants to do it, and we could have them ready to go in Billings by October 1st. So they could go in mortgage, I forgot to cover it before. They would normally go in mortgage payments, real property slips, that go to individuals, not to mortgage companies, and then in all personal property bills. I've got on the previous page here, I'll show you in a second, the amount of billings and mailings that go out each year. But this is the timeline we would propose that is accomplishable and would meet the spirit and intent of what the board had asked for before. This would give me the time to put in the bills for the December 5th billings, and certainly by next year too. But the website option would have the same exact kind of look. You could select one of those six options and then send the money in that way too if you want to make a voluntary contribution. So now let's go back to the cost of the program. A reminder, the Alamo County program that went for a year collected about $2,000, I think. The program in Prince Edward collected about $2,000 year and collected $3,000 or $4,000 in 1 year. But over total, between all of them, the years it was done, it collected about between $5,000 and $7,000, I think, was total, somewhere akin to that. So there are some risks and the cost of the program. The least costly option of all these, and the ones that is the fastest and most simple, is the website option. So regardless of which way you go, if you decide that the program is costly, know that that is the cheapest because we can just implement that. We already have payment systems in place. If you want to go with a system into this, these are very rough preliminary pages. We actually have to get some final costs on them. We've got quotes from different organizations. If you'd have to print these, that's a relatively inexpensive cost for a year. It would be probably less than the $1,400 I had listed there. But that was just a rough ballpark estimate for some colored paper and printing on both sides and then cutting into threes. Even at Staples, you can do that for 4, 5, 6 cents a copy. You get three out of it. If you go to the bulk, you might be able to get better than that. But then, if you use a separate sheet of paper like that, then of course those have to be stuffed in envelopes along with the bills, and there's some stuffing costs. The preliminary stuffing cost they've given us is about 7 cents a flyer. I'm not positive because these are all pretty preliminary, but I think we can probably get a rate lower than that over the course of the year. But if we look at these as basic costs and look at the almost 60,000 mailings that go out to property owners, and those to the owner himself, not to the mortgage company, and to the personal property bills, we're talking nearly 60,000. And there are some costs in printing and producing and including these in the envelope. The second alternative that is conceivable, although we've just gotten very preliminary figures on, and still based on the preliminary figures, so kind of expensive too. The top part here is what you've just seen. This is brand new. I just put this in about half an hour ago. Down here at the bottom of the screen, somewhere that's kind of small. Right now, it costs us about $8,000, $9,000 a year to mail out the bills. Now, did that include the postage on the $1 sheet this afternoon?
No.
$2,200?
Okay. No.
That was for the forms and the stuffing and the envelopes, less postage. Postage is going to be the same on either option. But right now, we spend about $9,000 a year to mail out those 60,000 bills. If we go to, for instance, like an 8.5 by 14 form, which you mentioned, Mr. Kennedy, you could then potentially put one more drop-down piece at the bottom that you turn off. It could have something akin to this. Now having an 8.5 by 14 bill is a little bit more expensive than an 8.5 by 11 bill, but then stuffing would largely be the same. But the preliminary quotes that they've given us for, this is an annual figure, I've annualized this because we need more than 12,000 and about 45,000 of these. These are the annualized figures for that. I think they are very suspect because they're just real quick, fast, hot off the press from the company today without any talking to them, without any negotiation. My strong preference, and certainly the treasurer's as well, is for simplicity. A separate stuffed mailer in the envelope is much simpler to handle than trying to create a new bill and a new form and a longer form and then make sure people tear it off the right one and put the right check with the right thing and put it together. I think there's potential for problems there. But it is certainly doable in either form. What I want you to make sure you understand is this includes staff processing time or staff costs or preparing the BOS for the board appropriations and things like that. It will be a program that, in my opinion, will probably not be keep, but we'll see over time. And again, the fastest way, the easiest way to get up and running, we can do is to come first with that website option. But that's kind of answers all the mail on the policies, on the types of forms, on the options for stuffing. I just don't have the final absolute hard concrete cost because we're just trying to get these pretty fast. And we've got to get companies to do different quotes on it. But that would be part of your package for the August 7th 2 p.m. meeting. And I'd be delighted if you have any questions for Mrs. Leonard or myself, since she's here tonight. She can answer the questions that I don't know the answer to.
And one thing, gentlemen, you may consider. One thing you may consider, putting an insert in the tax bill, that contribution does not have to be paid at the same time as your taxes. A person can hold that for a couple of months, you know, whenever they may have a little extra cash or whatever, and make that payment. So it's not something that we want them to think they have to just make it at the time they're making their tax payment,
right,
that it can be made at any time.
Thank you, Madam President. Any other questions or comments from the board at this point?
Yeah. Kind of expensive, but how are we going to market this idea? I mean, get this idea out into the community. I mean, we've got to talk it up, you know, get people to know about it. Because they can see that on in there. If they are hearing that about it, they won't understand. So we've got to do something with I know we had some on the news that was a good while ago. We need something in the paper, or we need some authorizations to email.
That's absolutely an easy purpose to book or truly, because sort of fan mail, the link, the donation link will be found on our website. I've already talked to Mrs. Keller. We can make the same exact promise link on theirs. They have a couple ways to do it. General schools, and there's some special programs. They will still manage their special programs, like the specific school funds. This would get you to the general Atlanta County Public Schools, but they would have a link, we would link. Fan mail, our website, articles in the paper, information flyers to various churches and organizations around the county, and truly, we could get it out pretty fast. Every single board supervisor meeting, I could make mention of it and have the flyers in the back as well. I don't think it'll take very long for people to know that it's an option, but the people that are going to look to donate it kind of probably already know about it.
I guess the only quibble that I would have is sort of a limitation. I mean, obviously, the company can't let you do this now. So any kind of limitation, I mean, I kind of like to think that if I donate to the school system, that Mrs. Keller would be able to direct it to precisely where it needs to go, that she would have the professionalism not to use it for recurring costs, and she'd use it aimed at a one-time cost. Same with general fund, same with department rec, or any case like that. So, I mean, that would be my concern in general, is that I really want to trust.
How much would it test run it before we did all?
Well, this would be the hypothetical test.
Yeah. Oh, truly,
you know, the big thing, like
the one of the reasons I'm not a huge fan of changing the bills is because if this is a test and we don't use it for some time or leave the website after that, now you've got a brand new redesigned bill. Now you've got to go back to another kind of bill. And there are setup costs when we create a new bill. I think it's $300 for the new setup costs to set up a new billing thing when they print out the thousands that we do. So, you know, well, this is, we'll get these costs down as low as we possibly can, but stuffing this in is kind of a simpler thing than trying to modify the actual bill. And if you just, you could also go to, for lack of a better explanation, if this is my blue personal property bill, and there's a kind of a blank area there, but you draw the stamp that says, if you'd like to make a voluntary contribution to the program, go to www.louisianacounty.org. It wouldn't be money on here, there's no block hole to put it on there, but you could have a, you know, kind of an overprint on there in some ways too, if you decide to go with the web option. But anything that might flooding the buildings.
Just have 1 or 2 weeks out of the year for donations.
Well, the website is 24/7, 365.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's people who don't want to do it, don't do it.
That's right.
They don't need these things. But anyway.
Mr. Chairman, I have a few comments.
Mr. Pettit, yes, sir.
Talking about. One is, as you know, I'm very concerned to make sure that the public is aware that this is not taxed. They are not obligated to do it. And not to mix them up. Because as you know, if I have a $100 tax bill and I want to donate $25 to the schools, I write one check. That's a difficult thing to deal with. So that's another reason, in my mind, not to put this on the tax bill, to have an insert, separate insert instead. Second thing is, with respect to limiting the objects of the contribution, there's another consideration that I think you might want to bear in mind in terms of, and I don't have a particular complaint with these six or two or three more or whatever you want, but I think it's desirable to put a set of specific directives on here. So I want to donate to general government or the schools or whatever, and that is that in order to be deductible, it has to be for public expense. So, Louisiana County Schools clearly qualifies, the sheriff clearly qualifies, the library clearly qualifies. What I'd be concerned about is to have somebody come in and say, Susie Smith wants to go out for lacrosse and she can't afford a new stick, so I'm going to donate $50 for Susie Smith's new stick. That's probably not. Now, maybe it's to the schools with a request that it be used for lacrosse. You know, that's okay.
Right.
But so having some specific criteria, there's some specific directed objectives, I think it's desirable. From the standpoint of Delmore as well as the staff.
I would disagree with the county attorney in one respect. It will be impossible, and I say that it will be impossible for the treasurer's office to take a check with an annotation on the bottom of it that we want this to go to lacrosse at the schools for them to then relay that information in any kind of form to the schools to have the actual designation.
Well, that's a detail. And
sure.
That could be Mrs. Smith is a big lacrosse booster and comes to the schools. They're aware that she's attending that. And that's oratory anyway. It wouldn't be the cash and check. It belongs to the schools. If you don't spend it on the cross,
I think that the boost was put up at the high school is tax deductible.
Well, yeah, but that's a different kind of deduction.
Right. So right. Yeah.
And on the school website, they have a rather complicated donation page. What my intention would be, Mrs. Kelly and I have talked about this, would be to take out the basic school thing and have this one donation button on both sites. The more detailed one that has the booster club and the school funds would stay resident with the schools because it doesn't wash through the school's budget, it washes through other organizations. They're just the information purveyor. But I think the county, as well, we should have one voluntary donation program, including the schools to be designated as one of the alternatives. But to manage any level of specificity in the treasurer's office or the finance office is really difficult, and would be almost prohibitive to do that. I don't know how
we
would operationalize that.
I'm not so sure you might be able to buy it or just buy it and say, just, you know, trust the
professionals. Well, yeah, to your point, let me back up here. This section where I talk about the potential for restricting where it goes, I really want the receiving departments to be able to designate the budget line. But truly, we don't have to put any restriction on it, but if they designated a budget line like salary, when it gets to finance is going to ask me, and I'm going to say no, and then I'm going to tell you, and you're going to have to override that, because it doesn't make sense to put a donation towards a staff personnel line, because it's not part of the base.
Yeah, and then wouldn't that ultimately rely on your department head, so? Make, I mean, obviously, if they're making that recommendation, I mean, they're saying, well, I will need salary. The county administrator's got to say no.
really sort of a decentralized command.
In most cases, the way it is now, the rules, they don't have that authority anyway. Yeah. That's kind of the county administrator. That's what the word policies are. But, I mean, I don't think there's much chance that people are going to try to use this for a stipend or a benefit.
Yeah.
But when you're setting policy, it's just much easier, in my view, to make it clear to begin with. And what's your intent as a board? Where is
I think your first paragraph clarifies that.
Okay.
That's just my opinion.
I don't have a model of that. I agree. Common sense.
I mean, it's common sense. We're, once again, keep it simple.
Yeah.
Okay. Just keep it simple.
I guarantee you. I guarantee I'll be back asking for clarification in 6 months.
As is your habit.
So that's the timeline we can do, but my intent would be then to put this together, put it in your package for August 7th, and then you all can decide and begin operation.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. Moving on to discussion of growth of Lubana County Community Planning Areas. Suspension.
Mr. Chairman and members of the board, The Planning Department and Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission are working on the Zion Plan, which will be brought to you in August. We also, as part of that plan, have been working on implementation strategies. These strategies should contain three goals we had in mind. Support the rural landscape by creating an economic climate that enhances the viability of working lands and conserve natural lands. So support the rural landscape, help the existing places, help them thrive by taking care of assets and investments such as downtowns and main streets and special places such as Palmyra, Columbia, and Pleasant Grove, for example, and create great new places, new developments that would fit into our landscape, building vibrant, enduring neighborhoods and communities that people, especially young people, do not want to leave. And these approaches benefit the economy, the environment, public health, and the community as a whole. So, we identified some implementation tools that have not been used by this county, things that we have talked to the board about, to Planning Commission about in the past, as well as others that we've identified through the development processes that we've been working on lately. And so these are the ones that we requested the Planning Commission to review and to give us feedback so that we could rank our next priorities for the fall and the winter prior to starting our work on our comprehensive plan. Phasing of development is one, and this chart that you see is a typical phasing schedule that would be in a comprehensive plan or a zoning ordinance, and it requires a developer to phase the residential component of the development so that it's more gradual and the impacts to the fire and rescue and schools and roads and water and sewer are considered. And, for example, for a minor subdivision, which would be 2 to 3 dwelling units, there would be no phasing required. But maybe for a major subdivision or moving on to 21 to 40 lots or even 40-plus lots, then the phasing would have to be over a period of a certain amount of years. this could be... We could put this in the comprehensive plan, and then the developer could proffer something like this, and so that the board could see. And it's a typical proffer that you see, the phasing. One thing that I would like to mention is that for phasing, even though it's a typical proffer, you do need to be careful that when reviewing phasing, that the proffer is written so that it really does require development of phase one and maybe non-residential prior to the residential component. And then the developer may not be able to move on to phase two until phase one is complete. Central or public water and sewer requirements. This is can be used in our A1 district, for example, and it can require the major subdivisions to have central or public water and sewer. You see it both ways in ordinances. Of course, public water and sewer would extremely limit the growth potential, and the Planning Commission is concerned that it would limit it too much.
Can you give some examples of that, how that might be done, or how that might be set up?
There is a sentence in A1 ordinance that, or I'm sorry, in our subdivision ordinance that would say all major subdivisions must be on public water and sewer. Then, if you wanted to develop your land in an A1 district, you would need to make sure that, you would have to be on central water and sewer in order to divide more than the lots that are allowed for minor subdivision.
So, where might that water be coming for central water?
Right. We don't have central water and sewer right now in most places in the county, and so it would limit development until we ran the water and sewer system to that area.
Groundwater then, call it central.
Yeah.
One thing we haven't done is we haven't been confronted with the idea of development paying to extend whatever infrastructure there is, whether it's public water, public sewer, whatever it is. And that's one thing that's it's going to happen as soon as we start getting our public water and public sewer in. And that's consistent with this. And what one thing that would do is it would mean that if a developer comes in and says, I want to put in 1,000 lots, maybe so, 1,000 lots in an A1 area that's in comprehensive plan as being rural preservation, that would not be appropriate. And it would be a simple matter to say it's not appropriate to extend public water in this portion of the rural preservation area conflicts with comprehensive plan, therefore you can't do it then. You've got to have a smaller scale development. Or you could put the same development, but you put it in the development area.
Ms. Mitchum, obviously that's a fair enough point. You're talking about restrictions or concerns of the Planning Commission in terms of things that might restrict for it. I know that earlier this year, the Board of Supervisors passed riparian buffers, which would be another jump that we have to do. How exactly do all those things really tie in terms of deterrence to growth in that area? Has there been any conversation about walking back some of those deterrents?
You mean rescinding some of those, or we haven't had any problem because we actually put in with the riparian buffer issue, for example, because we put in a section that allows there to be I know that our county attorney is going to trade-offs. No. where I could grant somebody the ability to encroach into those buffers if they mitigate it somehow. And so it really does, Flavanna's ordinance really has much more flexibility than many ordinances when it comes to that. It's a really nice trade-off, and I think that's why our BZA hasn't met for so many years, because there are things in our ordinance that allow flexibility. So this central water and sewer or public water and sewer is certainly a tool that is used throughout the Commonwealth. It is one that that I think has been upheld by the court, and or there haven't been challenges. This one still stands as a way that you can really, without downzoning property, you can really affect the rural areas of the county. And it seems to me, from everything that I've read and know, that in this county, that is a major concern about protecting our rural areas. And so this one ordinance in place certainly allows that. I can tell you, though, as well, that central water and sewer, which is the typical one used by counties, because if you require public water and sewer, you certainly are not going to get much growth at all, but the central water and sewer is what's typically used. You end up with a lot of central water and sewer systems that the developer has created. Certainly it's more expensive, and many developers will not go ahead with subdivisions because of it, but it then has these central systems, these small central systems for each subdivision all over the place, and from my experience in other counties, we will end up getting calls when something fails, and the citizens want something done. It is not our responsibility to fix the problem, but certainly it's a concern as a government official that that we do have citizens that are struggling.
Trade-offs is one word for it, speed bumps sometime or another, perhaps from a different perspective. And obviously when you're in a red-hot environment like, 2004, 2005, 2006, and that's the way the conference written, you want those speed bumps, so to speak, to make sure you start thinking
about it. Right.
But in the other, in the other way too, things like repairing buffers and things like that are good from one perspective. On the other hand, is it a deterrent to say, large retail? Is it a deterrent to manufacturing plants? Is it a deterrent to, those sort of things? Or does it sort of make the argument for a developer before they even come into Flavanna County that the sort of development they need to be bringing is residential and not commercial? So those are sort of, I'm glad to hear the flexibility point of view, and it's just only one part of the puzzle, obviously. But those are the sort of things that I think give potential economic development there some pause for deciding what precisely we're going to do. And I'd really hate to have our ordinances or the comp plan sort of make people's mind up to what sort of great growth they believe they can bring into Flavanna County. Mm-hmm. That would be my primary concern in that regard.
Okay.
So I'm gratified that it's being thought about and addressed.
Okay. Thank you.
The water, who would be responsible? I've always heard that maybe they could come back on the county. And the county might very well be responsible if the developer goes bankrupt.
Let me answer that question. The county's not going to be responsible for leaving. Now, that doesn't mean there's not going to be pressure on you.
More leaves.
And one of the things is that there's pretty much bright lines in public utilities, water and sewer, and that is when it comes to public service. When it's a public service company, it's closely regulated by the SEC. And that makes a big difference. As I recall, that's 50 connections. I don't remember what it is with respect to commercial and industrial. I think it's a similar standard. But for residential, it's 50 connections. And at that point, the SEC is going to oversee it to
not infrequently you don't have professional management, or you have limited professional management. A lot of homeowners are going to be reluctant to raise assessments to the point where it becomes financially viable, and it gets behind. It's the same problem with private roads.
Sounds like Lake Monticello.
So it's exactly, well, Lake Monticello actually was it was a regulated utility, and it's still got to be that bad. But it came out because at the end of the day, Aqua came in with a whole new approach to a more rigorous financial management. Now, maybe expensive, but I think Aqua's system is stable at this point. We're no longer in danger, as we were many years ago, of the Lake Monticello system collapsing, not being functional. And of course, one of the problems that Aqua encountered when they bought it was there was so much deferred maintenance that.
They at one point offered to sell that system to prevent it coming from the block, and the county turned them down, saying that it simply was not going to work. Ask any Aqua taxpayer, ask any Aqua Virginia ratepayer right now, and that's the reason why they didn't buy it. It was the cost of going in there and fixing it was so immense.
It was huge. There was no question. My memory is there was no question that the county simply wouldn't have been able to operate at anything like a break-even. Aqua could do it because Aqua had major capital behind it, almost unequal experience with operating this kind of system. And they knew how to. I don't want to sound like I'm criticizing it, but they knew how to play the game. They knew what investments they needed to make first, and then right. That kind of thing.
But didn't the company that had that didn't do well, weren't they called Aqua too?
Aqua Source.
Aqua Source.
Different company.
And that different company. Yeah. How in the world did they make the same name? Because people, I think, they think that's the same
Aqua
company.
Water.
But they're different.
But to answer your question, Mr. Waver, you set up a 10 unit,
that's your definition of a small one.
Well, I'm just throwing that out. Right. It could be two, could be three, could be 25. But these things have tendency. That's an absolutely valid concern. And to tell you the truth, my inclination would be to lean toward at least acquiring public service companies, if not downright public systems, for exactly that reason. Because you get in there and you get people to live there for 15 years, and they're used to being, turning the tap, the water comes out and flushing the toilets and sewer goes away, and they've been there for 15 years, and all of a sudden, now things have aged and deteriorated, and you don't have sinking funds to keep up with it, and what do they do? I know in other counties, they go to the county because there isn't anywhere else to go.
Put it in terms of developers walking away from subdivisions that aren't ready for VDOT to take over.
Yes.
Exactly. Look at the number of complaints you get today about that, and not much we can do about it. Although we can work with VDOT, we can try to find the developer, but the fact is, they're gone and walked away. The homeowners in that subdivision are stuck, like they would be with the water systems, except that replacing a mile-long road is not the same cost as replacing the water system.
To give you an example, it's out of my experience. I happen to represent the Farmington Owners Association. It's a high-end subdivision in Albemarle County. And for many years, that was a private system. And they ended up getting a water source from the county, on the county water service authority, and ultimately ended up donating the system to the service authority, most of which had to be rebuilt anyway. And it cost a pile of money think it's about 100. It's not terribly large, but it's a more golf course than home.
Yeah, just for personal education, I believe that there's a certain public hearing that would be offering something like a central system for their water coming up the Walters Bridge. Is that correct? Or did they intend to do wells? No, they intended to do central water, right?
Land unit developments must be on central water systems.
Their source of water as well.
Yeah.
That's the way they understand.
Right, but it would still be a central system.
Connect to central
water. So in other words, it's
taking time. Well, that's right. That's
one of the, in my opinion, at least.
What does that mean?
They're taking time on the central well. So pretty much put it on the well, everybody has the same problem you have at Farmington or anywhere else. It works in places. Did it work at Lake Monticello?
Really?
Sure. So how did they make it work in Santa Fe? And not,
I'm sorry, we're
really that's okay.
Digressing, but this is a good digression. How did they make it work in Santa Fe?
And I'm not thinking didn't have work.
No. That's not exactly making it work. It works. It's getting high.
Even just north, it works at Zion's Crossroads because they feed the entire Spring Creek South.
Louisa County with water.
Yeah, but
Louisa County, I mean, that's a little bit different, though, because that's a public utility, is that right?
But it's still I don't mean the failure of it. I mean, feeding it with a viable system.
Right.
You know, they've got about a system. That is a public utility, right.
Yeah.
And if that were not a public utility, if that were dependent upon somebody maintaining it, all of a sudden it went crash, and the developer didn't have enough money to take care of it, someone would feel responsible.
There's no incentive for these smaller developments perhaps to go ahead and go and maintain roads, or even something the size of Lake Monticello where you had 11,000 people could not.
In the development world, it's a quick in, quick out oftentimes.
Yes.
And it's the get started, take the profit, go away. And I'm not complaining at all. I'm just saying that that's fairly typical of a lot of subdivisions. There are, I gave Mrs. Finch a list of about 45 subdivisions a month or two ago. Just ones I deal with in a county that are really nice subdivisions. You all know the names, and when you drive in, there's 40 lots and 3 built, or there's 50 lots and 17 built, or there's 100 lots and 2 built. All those are wells. None of them have central systems in general, but we really need, as development starts to come ramping back up, we need to drive some of the development into those existing subdivisions and also watch for the flushing those out to give you a list. Here's a subdivision, here's how many lots there are, here's how many vacant there are. And that's everywhere through the county. Now, local, one district, it's everywhere.
Ms. Finch.
Okay. Planned unit developments. There's been many lessons learned. There's been issues that were raised throughout this first process that we undertook. They take an enormous amount of staff power with specialties from all areas to really look at a project and analyze it and give feedback to the planning department to submit back to the developer. And because there's limited staff and limited time, one thing that we could do, I think that this issue will take an analysis much greater than this, a discussion of its own. And a couple things are to possibly have two sets of two PUDs, a PUD 1 or a PUD major, and a PUD or a PUD 2, PUD minor, something like that, for the smaller PUDs that don't have so many requirements. And we need to ensure that PUDs are at a scale that are walkable but fit into a community. A PUD that you would see in Palmyra should have a different appearance and be very different than a PUD that you would see up at Zion Crossroads, for example. And so I would like to bring this issue back to the Planning Commission and the Board as a separate issue with many suggestions for changes. And it's brand new. The staff is it was the first one, and So anyway, there's the PUD. And the resizing and reshaping of CPA is the next one. And in thinking about this, we were working on the Zion Plan when we were creating this, and then applying it to the entire county. But the resizing and reshaping, for example, of Zion Crossroads CPA may be an extension going out Route 250, because right now it's more of a, the shape of it includes many rural roads. And does that make sense when our best opportunity for development is on to out 250, 15? So do we want to reshape that? And the Planning Commission also, there was in the discussion of this the other night, the Planning Commission stated the same thing, that that 250 really should be, the CPA should extend out. Yes. So, and sometimes when you, when a development is proposed, it really brings to light that a CPA might need to change size and shape in the other direction and be smaller. And so some of our CPAs are on two-lane roads and don't have the water and sewer capabilities yet. So do we want to ensure that the core is built first and possibly shrink the size of the CPA until we are able to provide amenities for or infrastructure for these areas? New requirements for development. Fiscal impact analysis. Lately, in the past several years, this has been a topic of discussion. Boards have really wanted a fiscal impact analysis done. We don't have a requirement for it in our ordinance, and so one of the suggestions is that we do require it of an applicant, especially in these tough times when we need to ensure that that growth is really paying for itself. Hydrologic studies, also a concern. They are required in our ordinance, but they're required at a later time. And the concern that I have is that is to catch these things before the rezoning takes place, and so that the board really has a clear idea of what the action their actions would do, and you're given all the information that you possibly could have relating to that. So a suggestion from staff is that we require these at an earlier stage in the process.
Is there, I mean, obviously, you know, when you require a fiscal impact analysis, I mean, I would like to think that's something we would not want the developer to do independently of us. I mean, obviously, you come back and say, fiscal impact, of course it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be great.
Right.
It's probably not going to be great for us. Would the county be responsible for the fiscal impact then?
No, the developer would be responsible for the fiscal impact analysis, but just this afternoon I was thinking, and not surprised that you asked that question, because we still have to review it. And because of the planning department and the finance department have lack of specialists in fields or lack of time with these type of fiscal impact analysis, then there we may, and it's typical for a consultant to review a fiscal impact analysis, a hydrologic study, and a traffic impact analysis.
Right. So, quite biased, I would think, developer on that when you talk about student increases and on what an impact is that, and that's been a discussion now, like you say, for the last year, a couple of years.
You almost may want to have, like I talked about earlier, the RFP process where you've got some engineers already on cons. Here's the list of the ones you can choose from, and the cost is generally, between $5,000 and $10,000, and almost your developer you're paying for, but you have to use one of these two or three.
And you're not staff members that can do a lot of this?
Well, the other thing, not just on timing. I mean, the other thing you have, you already have a model for this, which you do with cell towers.
Right, exactly.
We already have a consultant on board.
Yeah, that's more technical, in a sense.
same process, though, just different.
You wouldn't use the same person, but it's pretty close to the same kind of analysis.
Well, they're engineers. I don't think you need an engineer to do what I'm talking about.
No, you wouldn't necessarily. What you,
yes, but, well, this is pretty technical.
You need an engineer to figure out how many things that's going to matter.
Oh, sure. If you build 500 townhomes on a crossroads as a developer, I'm going to tell you, oh, yeah, you're only going to get like 50 students out of that. And reality is going to be that every single one of those are going to be single-family households with two or three kids.
But there's average that's in county we already have.
No, that exact thing happened at Sycamore Square when that came up.
I would say that you would need to refer the developer towards a list.
In this case, though, we're not talking about a cost or county assessment. We're talking about a contractor similar to what we have for that's a $4,000 cost, but that cost is borne by the person who proposes the talent.
And a developer. Go ahead and pay that. And then we would look over their shoulder. Once they finish that
person work,
handed in.
That person works for cancer. That's right. They work the consultant.
Yeah,
works
okay. Okay.
They do the study, the contractor pays it, and we get the results.
You got it.
The contractor's results. Yes. I just don't think, I'm not sure sometimes the board really understands how tight we are, and to do an extra project like this on a recurring basis.
You don't have many.
No, not the big ones, but even if you're going to do a 75 or 100 or 200 housing subdivision,
you can't make many of those in the last 4 or 5 years.
No, but when we do have one, it needs to all stop to work on that. Like the Walker Tree subdivision has been a huge, huge amount of work for staff during the whole process over the last year.
Let me just give you, for interrupting.
Sure.
I could give you an example of a project Alcorn County, which was a small, rurally oriented industrial use in a rural area, and they had 13 staff members working on the special use permit application. We don't have 13 staff members in planning. That's the magnitude of what you could get.
As long as the development takes the cost, and we can develop it shoulder.
Yeah,
that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, the contractor work, the cost of it.
And the fees that the developer pays for the rezoning or subdivision, etc., those fees should cover those costs. If they don't cover them, then we could certainly reanalyze it and bring new fees to you for consideration. So,
this is going to be something maybe added.
Yes.
You're going to depend on those fees, or is this going to be a special project, like you said?
Well, I think that's a detail. It's kind of premature to talk about. My concept.
But that's what we're, new requirements in that area, blah, blah, blah.
My concept is going down. Is the developer's going to pay for it within reasonable areas necessary.
Sure.
So it wouldn't just be...
I don't want taxpayer to mess with that.
No, clearly not.
Okay.
That's what we're going to build in the house.
Yeah.
And there again, the cell tower, the cell tower example is a good example.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Right, or Mr. Kenny's suggestion of a third party reviewing these is, it's a good suggestion, and that happens in the transportation industry. Oh, and also development industry a lot. So, cash proffer policy. This has been brought to the board in the past, and what you see here is a statewide chart showing what the typical proffers go to. And as expected, the highest percentage of proffers go to schools and transportation impacts.
Could you just talk about used to be once upon a time a conversation with proffers and impact fees. And obviously in Virginia, impact fees have changed rather radically from where they were once sort of a transportation related thing, or more of a water and sewer sort of thing. And now, maybe they'll be cold change into something else. But could you talk a little bit about just the difference between the two, at least as they stand in Virginia currently?
And Mr. Payne could probably speak more to it, but the impact fees are only allowed for transportation improvements at this point.
So it is the other way around.
Yes.
And Flavanna is not currently on that list to be included
No, they're not.
By
no, they're not.
Let me make a comment on this. There's a basic difference between impact fees and cash profits. Because impact fees are simply imposition. The county says, if you're going to do X, you're going to pay Y.
Right.
It's like a tax.
That's one word for it.
Well, it's more like a local assessment, but it's same thing.
Sure.
You want to do what you're going to pay.
Yes.
Cash proper is a different issue. And I'll be honest with you, I have never been entirely comfortable with the concept of cash proper. And the reason I haven't been is because the statute is real clear that all the enabling statutes for propers are real clear they have to be voluntary.
Yep.
And there is absolutely not the slightest question that the way they are implemented now is absolutely involuntary. Mm-hmm. And there was an early case on this that I think came out of Chesterfield that where the Supreme Court said, oh well, they proposed it so it had to be voluntary. Of course they proposed it because the staff was standing there twisting their arm in the back.
Yeah.
But early on the Supreme Court approved that. I have always believed that there's going to come a time when that's going to be revisited. Now, maybe you're revisited one of many ways, but two of them I can think of readily. One is that the Supreme Court is going to say, wait a minute, when it says voluntary, we mean voluntary.
Right.
The other way is they're going to say, we're going to expand this concept of local exactions or local assessments or impact fees or whatever you want to call it, to include all this stuff. So we don't worry about cash proffers. We don't care whether it's voluntary. We're going to pass a statute that makes it mandatory. Now, there's one thing recently that's given me some additional concern about this, and that is it was a United States Supreme Court case a month ago.
About a month ago.
Didn't deal with exactly this subject, but the way the court came down with it suggests to me that they would be, that the United States Supreme Court would be open to questioning the process of voluntary cash proffers. That was in this case it was out of Florida and it had to do with donations of conservation easements. Citation somewhere that I sent it to her. It's not exactly on point, and I'm not going to tell you that they said the cash proffers were out. They didn't say that. But the way that if you look at their analysis, what they're saying is, we don't like, my words, not theirs, we don't like the idea that the staff can come in and lean on these people and say, unless you pay up X dollars, you're not going to develop this property. It's going to remain undeveloped. And they determined that was a taking, it was unconstitutional under the federal constitution. And so that's just a little red light in the back of my mind that suggests that this is a real concern. So I don't tell you don't do cash proffers, but you know, when I see Alamo County talking about $59,000 for a single family lot,
there's an article here on East Ground Road.
Yeah,
that professor walked back their voluntary proffers. Yeah.
Well, they sent it back so the staff could negotiate with the developer over a voluntary proffer.
$754,000.
Yeah, that's like, you know, the highwayman sticks his pistol in your face and says, stand and deliver. You had a negotiation because you traded your wallet for that bullet in his pistol. He didn't shoot you. I don't want to be frivolous about this, but at the end of the day,
that's what proffers are.
That is not a voluntary exaction.
So, yeah, I mean, obviously, there's no impetus in General Assembly to go ahead and fix that problem, so that takes care of the impact fee part of the equation. In terms of the proffer side of the equation, we do not have a proffers policy in the Clinton County. I know that there's oftentimes a lot of misunderstanding with regards to the capital improvements plan. and what's included and what's not included. Could you educate some of us in terms of the CIP and how that relates to propers and what, why the county charges specifically for propers as it relates to the CIP?
Well, the in order to accept a cash proffer, the county must have the item on the CIP. And so there are a few, a typical one though is a transportation improvement. If a developer offers $100,000 for a transportation improvement to a certain road, and they and the road has been identified on a VDOT plan or a six-year plan, but the road has been identified as needing some type of improvement. The developer typically says if it's done in a certain time, then they will give $100,000 towards that improvement. It doesn't have to be adjacent to the property. The developer can do that. But that is one where it's identified in another plan, but possibly not the CIP. We certainly would turn around and make sure that anything that the developer would like to have to proffer, we would, if it is in the comprehensive plan and we needed to identify it, certainly we would work on the CIP to do that. But that is the relationship. The CIP is driven by the comprehensive plan, and then the proffers come. So it all works in relation to one another.
So as a generalization, the more you include on your CIP, the more you receive.
Absolutely.
And so
right.
There's obviously a number of organizations in Cuba County that understand this. And so it's, I think it's helpful to edify them as to why we include things in the CIP.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily from the perspective of we're trying to shake down developers, that's the point, but you know, from the perspective of when these things arrive, that should those voluntary proffers do come down, you know, that it's specific things that we're looking for in a plan to the future rather than just doing it for its own sake or the opposite end, just not planning for the sake of it.
Exactly, and that's why I've seen many localities, and I suggested to the county administrator that we follow these localities in a capital budget and a CIP, so that the planning commission, which is mandated by the state to work on the CIP because it's coming from the comprehensive plan, that I would then turn over to the county administrator. It's all written in the state code, and then the county administrator would work with the finance department on the capital budget coming out of the CIP projects. So in that way, you can have that wish list. It's very interesting. Localities do it differently all over. Some have this wish list with a lot of projects on it, and some want to have it very specific. But as you said, that is the best reason to make it
as comprehensive.
That's a perfect word for it.
Proffers worried for the money that we have. They may have to finish a certain amount of units before the money. And how much did we get?
There's three phases of proffers for the Sycamore Square project that's behind the CVS.
Right.
We've got two sections of money from them in total already for phase one and phase two. We've not gotten funds for phase three. Part of the phase one and phase two money has already been identified and spent for,
right,
I think, the school project.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the rest of it still remains there.
How much is phase three?
I think it was 111 and 184, and then the last was like 103.
That sounds, I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah.
Yes.
And those are the only ones that we had out there.
No.
We had in the big half set?
No.
There's a couple others.
There are a couple that are still there that are identified that we haven't identified. It's not a great deal of money, but they're identified and will be identified on your CIP to know where you can apply proper money that's available. And the intention next year is to make sure that the budget you give, you'll get three
packages this coming year. Mm-hmm. You'll get an operating budget, you'll get a capital budget, and you'll get a CIP. I think that's easier for people to understand. And you're gonna, I'm hoping that you'll adopt an operating budget, a capital budget, and then a five-year CIP that is the future year's plan. But the capital budget you're going to pass rather than the first year of the CIP would be a separate document.
The one thing about this is tying back to one thing we talked about before was the fiscal impact statement. So when a developer comes in and says, I want to rezone from A to B, he has to give you a statement of what the fiscal impact is going to be. The staff can use that to get a consultant on. But that will give you you'll be able to say with some reasonable degree of certainty that if you put in X number of units, here are the impacts that it's going to be on the public to support those units: schools, roads, police, fires, utilities, whatever it might be.
We do have a draft policy. It's been updated. about a year ago it was updated and reviewed by staff. We are having the finance department review it again currently. I don't know what the county attorney will suggest to you, but I have thrown out that possibly we don't call it a policy, but just that the board accepts the findings, and then I could use it in that way, not as a requirement, but as a guide.
that's not an unreasonable way to approach it, because it may be that a particular developer comes in, and I'm going to make this up entirely, but let's say a developer came in and said, we know that you have a particular concern about low-income housing, and I'm willing to put in this low-income housing. I can't pay $59,000 a unit and keep it low-income housing. So it is not going to pay its way, but it's going to satisfy a need the board has identified as an important need, and therefore we want you to approve this rezoning without any catch buffers. And that would be, if the board found that a compelling argument, the board could do that. On the other hand, the board would have the kind of document, what they call it, a policy or a guideline or whatever, that says when you put in X number of units, it's going to impose Y number of dollars on the public for infrastructure. So you're making an informed judgment. And if you say, we want this development to pay its own way, and you're not paying your own way, therefore you're denied. And that's the way the analysis could go.
Sure. So we totally don't get one this time.
Get one what?
A guide.
A guide, because we've been talking about it ever since I've been on the board. That's the way we do things. So
sometimes. That's
we think about things for you.
And I would really like to assess, decide, and execute, and get results as you move on to some of these things. So
I would be totally in this. And I'll go further than many of the reasons Mr. Payne mentioned. I'm opposed to proffers only because it's legalized extortion is what it is to a certain degree. So far. So I mean, but a guide rather than a policy, I think, would be a way that I could ease my conscience.
Okay.
If you wouldn't mind, and with the permission of the board, if we can prioritize something like that, I think Mrs. Booker would be very happy to see that.
Okay.
I'm sure Mr. Nichols would as well.
And let me move on to the next thing.
This is not moving, Mr. Nichols. Okay, well, that's being fixed. The last item. Jay actually prepared a graphic, so I hope you get to see it because he's very proud of it. But the last item is transfer of development rights. And transfer of development rights, it'd be nice to have that picture, but basically what it is there's a sending zone and a receiving zone, and in those rural preservation areas, you take the development rights from those.
This better be really good.
It's the best picture ever.
And you move them over to the receiving zone, such as our CPAs. The Planning Commission, when we were discussing this, I asked them for feedback as to what they would like to see, first, second, third, what they would not be interested in seeing, and here's what they said. Cash proffers is the first one.
At one point in time, there was another citizen committee that is, Mr. Booker arguing, we got together, we talked, we argued, nothing happened. There was some talk about, you know, A1 versus A2, or perhaps like a 210 or 10-2 sort of, you know, when we start talking about TRDs and things of that nature.
Right.
Was there any conversation with the Planning Commission as to which one, you know, I mean, any recommendation or
Mr. Kenny, the county attorney reviewed that and felt that, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but my understanding is that after a discussion with him, felt that those proposals that came forward were not legal. And, okay, so, but then suggested these others, such as Central Water and a TDR, for example, as possibilities. It's actually very limited without downzoning, which we really want to stay away from. It's very limited as to how to protect the rural areas, how to push that growth towards the CPAs. One thing that I went to a seminar and there were several attorneys that were talking about cash proffers, and there are counties in the Northern Virginia area that actually give developers, lower the cash proffer amount if they go to a development area that where some of the infrastructure has already exists. Because you certainly wouldn't need to pay a cash proffer for something that is in place already, unless, of course, there's a debt on it. But I don't know, but I could find out for you. The county of Frederick and the county of not Fauquier, but the high growth Loudoun are the two that presented, and others could be doing the same thing. But I thought that was a great way to try to get growth to CPA. Mm-hmm.
This is consistent with what I was saying. That is, you do the fiscal impact statement, but a fiscal impact statement in an area where the infrastructure already exists is likely to be less. The impact is likely to be less than one where the infrastructure doesn't exist, because you can just use what's there. It won't be non-existent, but it'll be less.
So finally, the list that the Planning Commission, so here's the great graphic that really shows the sending zone and the receiving zone. There are problems with this. There's only one county that uses them so far. Everyone loves the idea, but it is, it's difficult. They don't know who's going to be that middle person to accept the sending and give the receiving, because it can't be a governmental entity that does that, and there's other issues. It's not balanced, the sending and receiving, so there's many issues that need to be worked out, and that's why counties aren't using it yet as a tool, but it certainly is a great idea, and as we get more examples from counties that have staff in place to do it.
One of the issues, I mean, this is sort of a little more elegant way than what Loudoun County did. Obviously, they went ahead and created organized ghettos, and so what happened is that everybody went ahead both in those areas and sort of towns, and then property values just spring through the roof all the way around them. And so what you had, I mean, this is one way of slicing that cake where it's not as formalized, but there was always that affordable housing question in Loudoun County as a result, and the only affordable housing you're going to get was a condo, pretty much. So while I don't think that that's an immediate concern, that's sort of something that you cross that bridge when you get to it. That would be my first thought looking at this, that at that point in time you now
pretty much fixed what the building rate is in Levanta County, and all you're doing is moving around the pieces and preserving the rural areas and moving everybody towards receiving areas. But at the same time, there's the cost of housing then begins to go up. So how do you
right.
Remove that pressure?
That's maybe the problem. Maybe, yeah, that's one of the...
One of the issues is, does that in fact happen in the general case, or was that caused in large part by factors that were idiosyncratic to Loudoun? Loudoun's explosive growth, because I grew up in Fairfax County, and when Fairfax County, when I was a little kid... There were cows right in our backyard, and they're not now, but they're not allowed either. And if I wouldn't be too quick to attribute that to the TDR program, but rather the pressures to which the TDR program was subjected, because in one of the things that happens with respect to affordable housing, let's say. Affordable housing is delivered in a number of ways, but one of them is increased density.
Okay.
And so it's a lot easier to have one set of infrastructure for a relatively dense project and make that a low-dollar project. It wouldn't need to be multi-family, it could be even single-family, but a low-dollar project as opposed to Farmington is not going to be low-income. Housing in Tennessee. So there, I know in the city of Charlottesville, for example, they've had a couple of low-income projects that actually were single-family. They were small, modest houses on small lots, and that can work in appropriate circumstances. That again, in part depends on increasing density.
But also, you have the other effect is that, Alamar or Charlottesville has another effect. Even those small houses become very valuable. Value goes up when it's time to sell.
Well, the city has struggled with that. And one of the things the city has done is it's actually put limits on resale prices for these houses. The problem with that is you're designing this for, let's say, a young couple just starting out who doesn't have much down payment and stuff. They come in and get an entry-level house. They live in it for 5 years, and they improve it. And it's a much nicer house when they get done than it was when they began. And then it comes time, they've got a couple of kids that want to move up. Why is it fair to them to say, you bought this house for $110,000, you put $20,000 into it, market value is $190,000. We're only going to let you sell it for $130,000. Well, that's counterproductive, I think, because what you end up having is the people that really earn the upward mobility are punished for participating in the program.
But that's almost identical to the rules that apply to have that for rented houses out there too. It is, but it's a way to not have a big churn and people moving out just to make a quick profit when something happens to go up. And unfortunately, that's the rules that are similar rules that are in place for a part of that house.
Yeah, well, a lot of the CS habitat in the city, one of the things about it is that I think we shouldn't be too quick to assume that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of this, when you point to where it was a problem, it was a problem in 2007, right?
Right.
And the issues, the market is simply not the same, and it's not going to be the same when it comes to now.
Okay, and the last thing is that in discussing with this with the Planning Commission and asking them their preferences and what they'd like to see first, et cetera, and what they are concerned about, their response was that cash proffers was kind of an overwhelming overwhelmingly they wanted to see that first. Hydrologic study and fiscal impact analysis, that was also to actually require developers to do that. The it's almost all of these on the list, but resizing and reshaping the CPA of Zion in particular. Public water and sewer for requiring public water and sewer for planned unit developments, and the phasing of residential versus non-residential. The Planning Commission would like to see the non-residential be required to be done before the residential component of a development. And the use of infrastructure forcing developers to develop in CPAs, I believe that what they're talking about there is the central or public water and sewer. And the one that they did not want staff to work on was the TDRs because of the unknowns. They liked the idea, but they felt that there would be too much staff time and it might not be as beneficial as these others. So that is the list. And if the board has any comments back to the Planning Commission, I'd be happy to relay them. And
in your opinion, should we get rid of the UDA?
Of the UDA? Making it voluntary versus mandatory, it's my opinion that yes, we should.
So are we abolishing the UDA in its entirety? Or are you talking about the state?
If you're talking about changing the density, my biggest issue is the non-residential component before the residential component. The percentages of residential versus non-residential in the Zion area is also a concern for me, because the UDA had to be established, it was mandatory, so they placed a high percentage of the pie into it as residential. And so certainly it was very dense, and it was a requirement. So just to make it voluntary and to change the percentages to actually allow more land to be used for the non-residential component to attract that type of economic growth. I am not saying I am all for mixed-use developments. Mixed-use developments are the way of the future, I believe, and certainly create a vibrant area, place, sense of place. And but yes, I'd like to look at those percentages and the density. Well, a lot of planning does go into broadband, and I would have to bring more information back about that. I have discussed it. I've worked on it in other places, but along with the Public Works Director, and so if you'd like us to bring more information back to you on that issue, we'd be happy to. Okay.
The key for design crossroads of broadband is much easier there than doing it in the lines of Cunningham District or farther down Columbia District. Design crossroads is relatively easy compared to other areas, and so we will certainly take that into consideration as we do any development there, because obviously that's a great requirement. Any other questions?
Just a comment. You said non-residential before residential. You know, I can see that surely happen in
Zion. Right.
Other locations within the county, I don't necessarily see why. Because residential stimulates actually those things to come about. And I know in other localities, other like parts of the country, just that they make sure that they have the residential before they actually put in some
Yes, I'm sorry. I should clarify that I was talking about Zion. Yes. Right.
If you build a 1,000 home subdivision, not very likely tomorrow, but if you build a 1,000 home subdivision someplace in the county, we do have to recognize, that's why the fiscal impact is so important. We really have to recognize the impact of that in and of itself.
A water bridge is a great example.
Schools, roads, emergency services, police, you know, county services, etc. Just because there's so many studies done on the cost of residential on a local government.
One more comment I think I've made us before. We're so close to Louisa, it's on the crossroad. They are in throes of development of that area and are sort of corridor east of Muscle West. It really behooves us to be more engaged with that county in their planning, because it's, whatever they do would impact us. We should know.
We would love to be engaged with Louisa all the time, and Robert DeMay, my counterpart, and I have a very good relationship. We talk regularly. Bobby talks to Andy Wade, and Mr. Popowitz talks to Andy Wade, their economic control director, regularly and meets with him. But part of the slow up here has been, frankly, just kind of the bad blood that was going on for 2 or 3 or 4 years between Louisa and Savannah for lots of different reasons. I think that is settling down, and we are much more engaged now than maybe for the last handful of years. And there's absolutely no reason not to be.
Eric Persepp is the current chairman of the Planning Commission in Louisa. He sat to the left of me at the last PC meeting, and he is most willing to have a meeting with our
Thank you. And I think that the residential issue and non-residential issue and Zion's will be much clearer. We're bringing many things to you in August with the Zion sketch plan. So,
I'm very much looking forward to seeing you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fitzgerald, as always. Very edifying. It was a good conversation with the board as well. Next up, Economic Development and Marketing, Mr. Popowitz.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I think you probably all know that we do little things a little differently here in Fluvanna County when it comes to economic development, and that's by design. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit tonight about some of the tactics that we are currently using to get some of the things in that we have been able to attract and start those conversations with some of these companies that in the past we haven't been able to start with. First of all, we started a couple years ago, about a year and a half ago, we started making quarterly visits, even sometimes more visits, with various departments within VDP, including the international groups and various groups within VDP, and also we have made friends with the Trade and Commerce Secretary and his deputy, and also with the with Todd Haymore, who is the Agricultural Secretary. Some of the other things that we do, we attend trade shows, commerce events, such as the Governor's Small Business Conference, Governor's Agricultural Trade Conference. We attended the Broadband Strategy meeting with Senator Warner recently, last year. We went to the Mixed Use Development Conference, the Virginia Tourism Conference, and the Virginia Chamber of Commerce Economic Summit. We work with partners to create possible leads for our recruitment, and we try to become indispensable to our recruitment. That may mean getting them information on various subjects, and I'll get into that here in just a minute. These are some of the groups we're working with right now. Holiday Properties, I think you guys are familiar with the Bass Pro Shops over in Ashland. Those are the guys that are actually building out that facility and the surrounding properties. GDS is Global Dynamic, their recruitment that we're working with right now. In fact, they asked me when I went to Florida if I would check into something on, and I ended up having to go over on Friday after the July 4th, on July 5th, to the Tampa Bay area for looking at the shipyard, and actually got to go on a ship and see how it was loaded and all that kind of neat stuff, and report back to them. McGowan Business Group is another one that's kind of one of our partners. They're looking to come to this area at some point and put in, I think, Mr. Kenny, you're probably familiar with the Westbrook over there on Route 3, or West off the office park right next to the Kentucky Fried Chicken. You know what I'm talking about now? Okay. That has been empty for years. Mr. McGowan has filled that place. He is an international developer. Huh? No, 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 it's not empty anymore. No, no, that's what office park is not. They have full service. They have doctor's offices and other things in there now, and that's recently come about in the last year with when Mr. Gow took it over. He came out of Maryland. He had a facility. He had a company in Washington D.C. Got bored, decided to come out of retirement and do that, and he's looking to come to Charlottesville and Savannah area. So he's one of our partners. Obviously, the Virginia Economic Development Partnership, Dominion Virginia Power, believe it or not, is also not only a partner, but somebody that we try to recruit if we can get something here. The Central Virginia Partnership for Economic Development is also one of our partners. Equity Real Estate is a company that is not only a real estate company, but they are also what we call an angel investor or venture capitalist company. They have a lead for us, and they are one of our partners. Can't say enough about the Chamber of Commerce and what they're doing. And of course, we have Thistlegate. We're working on the viticultural area stuff, and Mr. Chester has been kind enough to help us with that or start helping with that. And then we also have Battelle. Now, Battelle is probably never going to come here to Fluvanna County, but they are one of the biggest research firms in the federal government, and we have ties with them as well, and we have been able to forge a relationship with them, so they are one of our partners as well. One of the things that we work on in Business Growth Sales 101, the reason that we've cultivated some of these partner relationships and other things, when you network with partners and they trust what you're talking about and what you're telling them, there's a level of trust created between them and the prospect as well when you have a prospect, because a lot of times they'll send those leads to us rather than us having to make a cold call or whatever. So I'd much rather make a soft call and have an introduction than have a cold call. But I've done cold calls, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that if we can create some of these partnerships and other things when we're talking about creating relationships with businesses, it's always good to have somebody that's kind of in your corner. Okay. All right. Some of the other tactics we use, we've created a, that the board has seen, a simple and easy to read marketing booklet for business prospects. It gives some of the data as far as our schools and our areas outside where, of the county where we have possible workers and things like that. The other thing we do is we use the internet and business news media. We find possible opportunities there as well. One of those being Project Atlas. That's the latest name for the project that we are working with on the state. In fact, yesterday we had a meeting with the state land folks on Project Atlas. They have looked at the facility that we were proposing and have found it to be acceptable. And if that company decides to come to Virginia, Fluvanna will be in one of the sites they look at. So I'm pretty pleased that we've gotten that far. I don't think we've gotten that far in the state process before. So what we need to still improve on, we need to probably better utilize our social and electronic media to further our reach outside of the Commonwealth, Virginia. I think we've done a pretty good job of making ourselves known within the Commonwealth, but now it's time to probably branch out a little bit more into our regional areas and into the Mid-Atlantic. The other tool that we use... Okay. One of the other tools that we use is when we have a prospective business recruitment coming in, they meet several different people. This is something that's probably unusual for most counties, but it's kind of what we decided that we needed to do for our prospects. The first person they meet, if they haven't met me already, is, of course, myself, the Economic Development Director. And then the next person they meet is Mr. Nichols, the County Administrator. We usually have about a 30-40 minute sit down talk with the prospect about Fluvanna County with Mr. Nichols, so they get a sense of where we're headed as a county. And then the next stop is always the planning and zoning administrator and her staff. We feel that that's important so that if a prospect comes in and they're looking at a certain piece of property, they know who to talk to. They also know what to expect from those folks and how long it's going to take them to do certain things if they decide to do a rezoning or special use permit. And also in that meeting is the building official. Mr. Lester is also present for that, so that he can talk about his process and if they are building a building or if they need to do any revamps. And then the last person that we usually have them talk to is the public works director about any water issues or sewer issues. And even if it's a piece of property that doesn't have water or sewer on it, you know, Mr. Stevens' expertise in groundwater and other things is certainly appreciated. So it's a team effort. We try to build strong personal relationships with businesses so they get a little sense of belonging within the county. Feeling welcome within a community is just as important as the site that we're looking at. We're not selling just a plot of land or a site. We're selling our community. That's what we're selling. Flavanna utilizes the entire region to showcase what is available, not only here, but other resources in Albemarle and Charlottesville and even Louisa. As part of our programming, we will take them to those other locales and show them if they have certain needs and show them where they can find those or satisfy those needs. And I feel like the Fluvanna County staff creates a sense of professionalism, a sense of team structure and orientation, and that's usually not part of the of other counties' recruitment style. Usually you meet with the economic development director, and you might meet with the county administrator at some later point, but we feel that that's important that they know the entire team that they'll be working with if they come here. So what are some of the attributes that we try to sell to these folks? In our booklet, the very top page, it says Fluvanna County, your location of choices. And what we mean by that is we're no more than 140 miles away from any major metropolitan area in the Commonwealth, and we're truly centrally located, and I'll show you what I mean by that as well. Our proximity labor market is about 190,000 strong with various skill sets, from degreed workforce to skilled labor workforce. One of the other things that gets people excited is we have no BPOL tax, no meals or lodging taxes, and our approach to recruitment is personal and professional. I've had more than one recruit tell us that they want to come to Fluvanna because, hey, we feel like we're already welcome and that we're going to be, we're not going to be shunned here. So, okay. I think that our whole approach to things is our brand. We have a very, like I said, recruitment is personal and professional. We are centrally located. There's the ideal central location. Location, location, location. You've heard that before. A lot of counties try to tout that they're the middle of the state or they're centrally located. We could actually say that. We are centrally located. I mean, you can see it right here on the map of Virginia. We're no more than 105 miles from Washington, D.C. We're 60 miles from the capital of Richmond. We're not any more than 140 miles from the furthest point in the Hampton Roads area. And Roanoke, Salem area is about 140 miles. So, the map is not, no ma'am, but the all the metropolitan areas and their locations and how far they are from us is in that booklet.
This was just created
up. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
You want to see the cards?
Yes.
It has some details on the back. I have a picture on the site. So we're meetings we can have. Yeah.
Our approach to economic development isn't necessarily pretty pictures. It's actually getting down in the trenches and talking to people and networking. That's what we need to do, and that's what I feel that is the best approach that we can have. You know, When you're looking at our access, you know, we have Interstate 64. We're not right on 64, but we do have very close proximate access. We have Route 250. We have Route 15 and Route 6, which is a Virginia byway. We have a lot to offer people as far as quality of life. We have the village of Palmyra, which is our county seat. We have Pleasant Grove, Lake Monticello's here with their amenities. We have the historic James River, which is America's founding river. We do utilize that, Ms. Booker. It may not be on this map, but we do utilize that quite a bit. If somebody says, where is Savannah? Do you know where Fork Union is? Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. Yes.
I met with last Friday to talk about a number of issues, including using Fulham in our marketing, Fulham in Pleasant Grove, and other types of things in our county. We really want to. When you ask someone, have you ever heard of working in the military academy? Everyone has. I want them to know that red dot, that red box on the news, where it's at. And so, our borough is very pleased to be able to partner on those kinds of things. And I've actually got him set up to come brief the board to give you a Fulham update and some building and structure updates.
Kind of wrapping this up, well, getting into some of the new initiatives that we'd like to work on next year, this coming year. One of them would be a technology overlay in our growth areas. It's something we did in Caroline for the entire county. I don't think that is appropriate for Fluvanna County. Caroline County had a little bit different situation going, but our growth areas definitely need to have some sort of technology overlay because it allows the board to decide whether or not they want to provide some sort of incentives. It doesn't change the underlying zoning at all. It doesn't change any of your property taxes, but it gives the board some options and tools if they so choose to use them, and we are working on those parameters, and I will be getting those to you probably in the next 90 to 120 days. One of the other things that we're working on is a database of available commercial properties. We're working in conjunction with our regional folks. They have some resources for some interns and things that can help us make that happen, so we're working on that as well. We don't own any public property that's commercial property, so you know, we have to rely on some of our folks that are out there in the private sector to get us that information, and so we're trying to take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and talk to those folks that are working on that so we can identify a lot of those properties. One other thing that we're looking to do is a site readiness criteria that's based on a five-tier system. It's something that Simmons came up with several years ago. The regional economic development has volunteered to pay for one site per county in the region, and we're trying to identify a site to go ahead and go with that free first free assessment for site readiness, and then start our own site readiness programming so that we can talk to business owners and landowners about how site ready are they if they want to sell their property. The other thing we want to work on, and that will be based on the site readiness criteria, is fast tracking procedures for things that are in a more readiness part of the system, like a tier 5 piece of property. We'd want to go ahead and fast track that if it came before the board in the process, so that there would be it would go through a lot faster, because what we have found in some of our talkings with some of these folks that are in this, any site that you can get done within 30 to 45 days has a better chance of being picked up by a major corporation or a corporation that's looking for it. So that's why we want to start these procedures and put these criteria in place.
Ready sites, the shovel-ready sites that we talked about for the city of the town. There weren't a lot of shovel-ready sites, and they kind of hung around. And they really mean shovel-ready sites. They were sites that had water and sewer structure, had telecommunications available on hand, you know, meet zoning requirements for that area already. When we've got sites like that, those are the kind of things where there's been a lot of pre-work done. they can get two planning commissions and up to the Board of Supervisors more quickly, so that we don't have to wait to reinvest all the time in doing things that we could have done in advance. That's what we're talking about.
Okay, so these are the key elements, and if you wanted to make that, say this is our brand, I guess you could say that. The key elements of our Fluvanna County Economic Development Program is basically we have personal and professional recruitment visitation program. We utilize networking and partners to produce leads. We have no B-toll tax, which helps with our recruitment. Research and business media is a key element in our recruitment process. We provide a welcoming vibe from the community and the county. Fluvanna showcases certain segments of the region as a Fluvanna County resource, and we maintain relationships that bring the county to the attention of viable businesses. And I think that if we go back a little bit here, let me see here, to this, here you can see that these are just a few of the people that we deal with right now, and I don't think that a year ago we would have been talking to these folks, or a year and a half ago. And these, some of these guys are major players. Equity Real Estate's a major player. McGowan Business, maybe not such a major player, but he has Holiday Properties is a major player. Dominion is a major player. Patel is a major player. I'm pleased with the progress we're making. I think that we're starting to get some reaction from the Virginia Economic Development Partnership and from the state of Virginia. And so with that, I will take some questions.
Any questions from the board? We need now
board action. When I was talking about the grant statement, I was thinking that that's something like that.
Yes.
I know you've probably seen the book here, but I'd like to have another one.
Okay.
And do you talk about, we talk about schools now, we talk about faith community.
Or what?
Faith community.
Not in the booklet. If somebody asked for something like that, of course we would talk about it, but I haven't had a lot of call from business entities that talk about that. My job is to
we could put that in there, we work with it where auditors, the church is strong.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, that's not clearly. Yeah.
Right.
Any other questions or comments
for
the board? Thank you, Mr.
Yes, sir.
Moving on to the consent agenda, Mr. Weaver, do you have any tabs you'd like to
pull? Yes, pull. You?
Have you, Mr. Weaver?
You want the minutes, Mr. Weaver?
Yes. That's where I am. On page 3. Down where we have presentations. Starts off. Mr. Wayne Stevens, Public Works Director, reviewed with the board 1 year snapshots of the utility costs for county billing. Here's where I think you really need to change the sentence. I think it would light some people. It says, the treasurer's office is one of the less, and I suggest that you say the treasurer's office and the library are one of the least expensive to operate. Put the library in there. Because that was along with the church office. Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Okay. Any other items need to be pulled or amended? Not like something like the move consent agenda?
I move the regular meeting minutes of Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors for Wednesday, July 3rd, 13, be adopted.
Along with the
extension of two
answers. Sure, second. Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Chester. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Moving on to unfinished business, of which we have none. Any items of new business? Ms. Booker?
I guess, Mr. Chair, I meant to say this when this report had to do the sentence that he said that we also Alabama, Charlottesville, and even Louisa. I thought the even needed to be taken out. I thought it gave you a connotation that's kind of negative.
especially for Lisa.
Especially for
Lisa. Any other items in the business?
Mr. Chairman, let me just say in this regard, I'm going tomorrow to compare the United States tournament in Lynchburg, and the representative from our district is Louisa.
There we go. Well,
Louisa.
Go Lions. Any other items of new business? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and move to our second round of public comment. Again, please remember to keep your comments directed to the board on topic within 5 minutes. Mr. Miller.
Won't take me 5 minutes to get there. Sorry. My name is Adrian Miller, and I live at Lake Monticello. Tick, 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 tick. It works. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I would say, Mr. Nichols, I approve of your fashion statement. Mr. Chester's following along. What can we do to get the entire board, including Mr. Payne, to follow suit? Oh, Ms. Booker, I'm sorry. You're excluded, Ms. Booker. You're excluded. But wouldn't it be nice if everyone was uniform on this fashion statement? No, I'm teasing. I had some comments, but since the public hearing was deferred, I will defer my comments till September. You know, I'm glad you brought up the voluntary contributions for people who feel really excited about certain things. May I suggest that you consider not mailing out a blank mailer to all the people, the taxpayers in the county, because I think it would be an added expense. I think it's necessary you have the forms on hand, but to me, it seems like it'd be too much of an expense, because any mailers that go out, you only usually get 2, 3, 5% return. And that's just a suggestion you might consider. And if and when I ever hit the lottery, I'll be the first to ask for one of those forms. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else wishing to address the board staff? Mr. Sheridan.
Please forgive me for coming in dressed like this. I came off the baseball field at about 6:15. I just wrote down a few notes and just wanted to say a few things. Number one, I think if you talked about making any donations, you talked about that program costing $5,700. The six organizations that you had listed, why don't we put a mailer in there that says contact and give them the name of somebody to contact directly and give that money to them? It may be a legal issue there, but that way we take out a middleman, takes hours off of them, because that's all I've heard them say is we don't have enough people. Second, I heard us talking about retaining an engineering firm, and that may somewhere down the road save us money. We have three brand new firehouses. We have a brand new library. We have a brand new court building. We have a brand new high school. Our other schools have all been brought up to date. Hopefully we don't have to have too many engineering projects in the future. And if we're retaining an engineering firm, that's costing us money each month that they're sitting there just waiting for us to have something to build. It doesn't? Okay, well, then I'm mistaken. Okay? But I just thought, as when you say retaining, I thought you said retaining. Okay.
Not that kind of retaining.
I got you.
Got it.
All right. Third thing, please forgive me for being tired. It's been a long 40 hours. Two-lane roads. Except for about 150 feet of Zion's Crossroads, every road in our county is a two-lane road. So make sure that we say that. Then we have some that are more residential. Obviously 15, 250, 6 are our larger roads. But every other road, now there's some that don't have lines. I do behind the wheel with kids every day. Trust me, it gets a little hairy. Next one. We talked about cash proffers. I don't claim to be an expert, but sitting here listening to you, y'all did a great job of explaining them. But I'm also in the back sitting there to myself going, there's absolutely no way that this contractor, whatever person you're getting the proffers from, is going to pay that out of his pocket. He'll pay that out of his pocket up front, and and eventually it falls right back to the people.
Yep.
It's just another way of saying a tax. Without saying the tax, we just put it on somebody else. Last but not least, so I can go home and go to sleep. With the meeting next week, please check with Ms. Keller. We're back in, or the 7th, the public hearing at 2 o'clock. It's already for the 2 o'clock one? Okay, because we're back in the building. And make sure, we need to just make sure Mr. Barlow knows. Okay. Alrighty, thank y'all. Appreciate it. Have a good evening.
Yeah, just for everybody's education, Sheriff is out there doing grass plugs all day in the heat, so he's earned respite. Anyone else wishing to address the board? Seeing none, we've been closed the second round of public comment. The board now to go into closed session to discuss the investment funds and legal matters.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Blue Banner County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provision. Section 2.2-3711-8.5, Section 2.2-3711-8.6, Section 2.2-3711-8.7, which includes prospective industry, investment funds, and legal matters.
There a second?
Second.
That's a motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Holmberg. All in favor?
All right.
Opposed? Chair votes aye, passes 5-0. The board will adjourn to the Morris Ring of the county administration.
Mr. Chairman, I move to close the meeting. The adjourned Savannah County Board of Supervisors convening in open session.
Is there a second?
Second
motion made by Mrs. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All being recorded votes. Mr. Chesser?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mrs. Booker? Mr. Allmore?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, passes 5-0. Mr. Weaver?
Be it resolved to the best of my knowledge on the public business matters lawfully exempted from other meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-8 Code of Virginia, 1950, as amended, among such public business matters as were identified in the motion of which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in a meeting.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. We need to ratify our extension.
Mr. Weaver. Mr. Chairman, I move that the board meeting be extended to 12 o'clock.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Chesser. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Do we have anything else for the good of the order? Hearing none, we have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Chesser, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.